Khodorkovsky's private charter jet pulled into a fueling terminal at the airport in Novosibirsk in Siberia in the wee hours of October 25, 2003. The Yukos chairman was en route to inspect an oil field. He planned to gas up his plane and take off again. Masked agents in camouflage dress from the FSB, the successor to the KGB, stormed aboard in the darkness, their guns drawn. They grabbed Khodorkovsky and placed him under arrest. They flew him to Moscow, where prosecutors charged him with 6 counts of personal income tax evasion, overseeing corporate tax evasion, document forgery, theft, and other crimes. The prosecutor general's office announced that Khodorkovsky's alleged crimes had cost Russia at least $1 billion in lost revenue. Khodorkovsky's spokesman at Yukos called the accusations absurd and said the brute force used to arrest the chairman had been humiliating for the whole Russian law enforcement system in the eyes of the world. The U.S. Embassy in Moscow judged that Khodorkovsky's arrest almost certainly must have been done with Putin's implicit or explicit approval, and it showed that the authorities may want not only to humble Khodorkovsky, but to destroy him and even drive him out of the country. Vershbo urged the White House to take action. The timing of the latest investigations, amid rampant speculation of an imminent deal with ExxonMobil or Chevron Texaco, and immediately following Putin's U.S. visit, does not appear coincidental, the ambassador wrote in late October. Khodorkovsky has refused to back down from the start, and for a while thought he had beaten back his persecutors. He was wrong. Less than 8 weeks after their meeting at the New York Stock Exchange, Vladimir Putin had given Lee Raymond his answer. Why did Putin authorize Khodorkovsky's arrest? The latter's maneuvering to buy allies in the Duma in advance of parliamentary elections, scheduled for December 2003, was probably the biggest factor. There was clear information that Yukos supported candidates who could have formed a real, sizable faction, Milov recalled. Putin is a person who is very influenced by these threats. The TNK-BP merger announcement on September 1st, followed almost immediately by Raymond's discussion with Putin at the New York Stock Exchange, in which he sought a path to majority control, may also have inflamed Khodorkovsky's rivals at the Kremlin. Khodorkovsky was negotiating with Chevron, too, the Silovikia knew. I saw these notes saying, "We might be losing our oil industry to foreigners in a couple of months completely," Milov said. It was kind of a scare like that. This factor was involved. I wouldn't say it was the ultimate trigger, because this is a very complex story. It was a competition for influence in the country, for control over the country. Raymond spoke placidly in public about Khodorkovsky's downfall. Everyone ought to take a deep breath, he said after the arrest. Rome wasn't built in a day. ExxonMobil wasn't built in a day. This is a long-term industry. He conceded that ExxonMobil had been interested in Yukos and had engaged in talks, but as to why it had fallen apart? There are some things there I'm not privy to in terms of the Putin-Khodorkovsky relationship. You know, I've got enough problems. In private, with colleagues and friends, Raymond could be more reflective, and even a little guilt-stricken. He wondered if the advanced state of his talks with Yukos might have prompted or influenced Putin's move against Khodorkovsky, he told friends and colleagues. The reality, almost certainly, was that Putin and Khodorkovsky were on a path of irreconcilable conflict, no matter what. For ExxonMobil, the arrest placed a punctuation mark on 2 bold but costly failures. The corporation's search for shoot-the-moon purchases of oil and gas reserves in Russia and Saudi Arabia had now produced back-to-back zeros. There were those who blamed Raymond's truculence and ExxonMobil's general arrogance for contributing to the strikeouts, but even if Raymond were Prince Charming and his corporation played well with others, that would not alter the fact that Saudi Arabia had no trove of non-associated gas reserves, and Russia's government had no stable plan to secure foreign investment in its oil fields. If even one of these 2 plays had panned out, ExxonMobil's reserve replacement challenges might have lessened in the decade ahead. Now the corporation would have to continue to scrap, and its reliance on tiny Qatar and unstable West Africa would not ease anytime soon. After Khodorkovsky's arrest, Raymond telephoned Cheney and asked for a meeting. He had kept the Bush administration out of his negotiations during the summer of 2003. He now told the vice president's office he didn't want anything from the administration, but he felt he owed them an explanation about what had happened, from ExxonMobil's perspective. Cheney suggested they meet away from the White House, at the vice president's official residence, on the grounds of the U.S. Naval Observatory, on Massachusetts Avenue. He and Raymond spoke for about 90 minutes. Raymond recounted the history of the failed deal. He and the vice president exchanged assessments. When Bush administration officials contacted the Kremlin to raise concern about Khodorkovsky's detention, Putin said that the rule of law in Russia had to run its course. Wasn't that what the United States said it favored? On January 29, 2004, a Russian commission denied licenses to ExxonMobil and Chevron for drilling in offshore blocks around Sakhalin, blocks that they had leased in 1993. Secretary of State Colin Powell met with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, and handed over a letter of protest on behalf of U.S. oil companies. The Bush administration was still fighting for the company's prospects in Russia, but its campaign looked increasingly like a rearguard action, fought while in retreat. ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco have invested approximately $60 million in exploration activities, Powell pleaded. He continued, "The Russian government's failure to issue a license to ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco would hurt the climate for U.S. and other foreign investment in Russia's energy sector and cast a shadow over Russia's reputation for fulfilling its commitments. It would also raise serious questions about Russia's commitment to our bilateral energy partnership. It has been 2 years since our two presidents launched a strategic energy relationship. Since that time, we have not seen the concrete progress in the foreign investment climate for energy that our partnership was intended to promote."